they've done a lot of research that shows, you know, the detriments of like being lonely and stuff. As a DJ producer, it's you're a one man business, and so there's a lot of times where you're flying on a plane by yourself. It's just you in the studio making music, and so just having this other community aspect to your life that has nothing to do with your work is really integral.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Headliner Mindset Podcast. Today's guest is a household name in the EDM community. He has been in the scene since 2009, where he started off throwing his own parties as a DJ in Florida. He has been consistently releasing massive records, getting support and collaborating with some of the biggest names in the industry and touring the world in the process. And he's also a badass surfer. This is Henry Fong. What's up, brother? Welcome to the show.
What's going on, Nick? Thanks for having me, bro.
Dude, thank you for being here. You know, what's really cool is that this is actually our first time ever talking to each other. We only just recently connected on Instagram, and you don't even know me, but I asked you to be on the show, and no questions asked. You were like, fuck yeah, I'm down. And I think that's so rad, man. You're such a cool dude. Thank you for being here.
Right on, man. I'm always down to kick it and chat with people. And I know we have a bunch of mutual friends over the years, too, through all the Icon Boys, so...
Yeah, yeah. And so not only that, I realize that you're from Florida. You're from Orlando. You lived in Orlando at some point, and you used to throw shows out there. And then I'm remembering I used to manage Dallas K.
Oh, that's okay. That's how I know you. That's how I know you, because Dallas.
From that scene. Dallas was the first artist I ever managed. It was literally for 1 month.
No way.
I booked him at Control in LA It's how I met Ryan Jaso and Chris White, and those were the guys that like got me into the industry. But my little month stint with Dallas was where it all began. And so when I saw you were from Florida, I was like, oh, I remember you guys were throwing parties back then.
Yeah, he was a big part of my journey. You know, I met him early on, and he was one of the best producers in the city in Orlando at the time, and we just like linked up and. I saw how talented he was, and we had him come play our night. We became friends, and there was, at the time, the new wave of dance music producers was kind of coming up, and Orlando was kind of this like rave capital back in like the 90s and the early 2000s. Like the break scene was huge, and there was tons of legends from the city. And then we kind of started forming our little crew. It was Dallas and these guys, Milo Notice. And we just had our little crew, and we threw this party, and we all just... woke up every day and we just made music every single day. We would go DJ every night. And all of a sudden, one by one, Dallas started, he flew out to LA. He started working with some of the biggest artists. He started touring. And we're like, whoa, Dallas did it. Like, dude, we could do it too, right? And so Dallas would help us out with music, and he would help us out with advice and stuff. And then eventually we all flew out there together from Florida.
Yeah, that's so cool because, you know, I think that for anybody to really succeed at anything, you have to have that foundation of belief.
100%.
And when you see somebody that's next to you do it, then it starts to ingrain that belief of like, wait a minute, this is possible.
Yeah.
Right?
If he didn't do that, there would be no, the path wouldn't have been as clear cut. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What was the moment where you were like, I can do this and I'm going to go for it?
Well, I think it was around that same time when, right around when I started to, we kind of made a company called Riot, me and my two friends. I was really connected on campus and I was really active at my college, UCF. And we're like, hey, nobody's doing a dance music party. And I was super into the music. I found out a couple of the other guys in the fraternity I was in, about like this, it wasn't at the time, it wasn't called EDM or anything. We just called it like electro house, electro, whatever.
Yeah.
I found out some of the music through them. And eventually I was like, nobody's throwing these nights in by the college. And I was like, I know a lot of people, my friends are good DJs. I was like, we can put it all together and I think we can make this work. And we started throwing parties. And I remember, I forget when the first night was, but I remember first night, maybe like 15 people came. They were only our friends. And then the next week it was 20 people. And the next week it was 50, like 100. And sure enough, just because we were curating such a new, fresh sound and we were digging deep and we were just playing music that nobody else knew, nobody else had this music. And we were just super, super crate digging, like this new sound of like Blog House at the time. we eventually got the night sold out with just local DJs just because we were just curating this new fresh sound. And we kind of just like filled the gap in the market at the college. And it was super special because that whole night propelled like the rest of our careers. And we learned like just being a promoter and throwing a night is just a microcosm of just like the full music industry. Just like you have to learn how to do everything, right? You have to learn how marketing works. You have to learn how business negotiation with the venue owner. The party's got to be fun. The music's got to be good. Everybody's got to get paid out. You got to get photographers. You just learn every aspect of the business from the top down. And I didn't realize how valuable that experience was going to be.
Yeah, man, having that real life education, music business 101, learning how to throw parties and what that looks like on the back end is incredibly valuable. And the other piece of that story that I hear was it just sounds like it was really fun and exciting. And you were just like, you know, loving it, right? Like the passion was there.
Yeah, we just love the music so much. And like, so with me at the Mile Office guys who individually go by DJ Nims and Kilogram and then Dallas, like we just love the music so much. We were never like, we're going to do this for a living. Nobody's getting rich off this. We just love this, you know? And you kind of start things for the right reason, just out of passion. And I think that allows you to just have that hyper-focus and just do good things with it.
Did that shift at all for you along the way where like it becomes a career, it becomes a job, it does become about like, I got to now pay my bills. This is my job. Have you had moments of losing passion along the way and having it become a job?
Yeah, that definitely kind of hits you later on and stuff because you know, the trajectory of an artist isn't always just like up and to the right. You just kind of have these like humbling moments and you realize like, you know, I'm running a business here and it doesn't really matter. Sometimes you have to put the creativity aside and run a business. And I kind of knew that early on because I had already run the night and stuff. So I kind of understood that. But also too, my personality as a artist too, there's artists that can be over the spectrum on like how creative and artistic they are versus how business oriented they are. And it took me a while to realize that I'm actually kind of the artist that's more on the business side. I enjoy the business of music and doing this and stuff. And that's my strong suit. And it took me a while to figure that out. And I'm a little less on the artistic side, you know? And I think there's not one right way to do it and stuff. So I did kind of have some awakenings along the way where you get humbled. Like you have a month or two stretch. For some reason, you just don't have any show bookings and you're like, shit, what am I going to do? And then you realize, hey, I'm running a business and I have to pay my bills and I have to make decisions sometimes based on this. And sometimes you have to put the creativity and the artistic stuff aside and just run the business properly. And so there's a lot of hard lessons along the way like that.
You know, I think that's just, it's such a great thing. And I've talked about it on here before is artists recognizing like, if you want to get out of the bedroom and you want to do this professionally, then you have to take that, you have to cross that threshold of it becoming a business. And you do have to start thinking like a business owner. And part of that, I've experienced that myself, where I'll sometimes have a month or two where I don't sign any clients and I'm like, oh, fuck. All right. You know, it's like, that's the journey of being an entrepreneur. You have really good months and you're crushing it. You have months where you're not, and it can be a roller coaster sometimes, but regardless, it is a business. So you have to treat it like a business to a certain extent.
Yeah, 100%. Super important.
Yeah. Do you think that now, because you came up in you really caught the wave, right? That like 2009, 2010, shit was still underground, just popped off. Do you think it's harder to make it as a DJ now than it was then?
So I have definitely have an opinion on this. So the catch is, right now, it is so easy to make music. It is so easy to learn how to make music. The sounds are accessible. People are accessible. You can go online. You can literally be nobody and you can post a song tomorrow and you can be viral the next day. And so there's this ability to reach millions of people instantly now that we didn't have back in the day. But the catch is it's way more oversaturated and there are 10 to 20 times as many people trying to do this as an artist. So the ability to stick out and then not only stick out of the noise, but then make something like a long-lasting impact is a lot harder now. But on the flip side, you have the ability to reach millions of people at the click of a button, which we didn't have in 2010. 2010, you had to build everything from the ground up, super organic, put in your time, be a part of the culture, do all this stuff. Now I can log on my laptop, learn how to make music in a year, throw together some loops, watch some tutorials, post it on TikTok, boom. But that it's pros and cons, right?
Yeah, get some AI artwork made in 30 seconds.
Yeah, right now the amount of time that you have to spend marketing yourself, I would say in 2010, I would say it was about 70% about the music, 30% about your marketing and branding. Now it's like 50-50, right? It's 50% about the music and 50% about the marketing and the branding and how well you do your content, if I had to like kind of put a number on it. So the importance of media, your content and your brand right now just exponentially got, I think, more important over time. But at the end of the day, music, I think, is the music still has to be very good. And that's kind of what gives you the legs to your career over time.
You know, as you were coming up, it's like you mentioned a couple guys that popped off and did well. I imagine you also saw some other people that were getting after it that maybe didn't take off and it didn't happen for them. What are some of the common downfalls and speed bumps that people hit along the way that you've seen people get caught up in?
Dude, that's a great question. I think the number one thing is not having the ability to pivot fast. And I kind of, this is something too that I learned along the way, and now I have a good grasp on it. I kind of, Jeff Bezos, and there's some famous finance guys that say this, but it's called strong opinions, loosely held. And what that kind of means is you can think, you gotta have conviction in what you're doing now, but when new information is presented and kind of things change, you have to be able to drop your old opinions and move on and keep up with the times, right? What a lot of people like to do is they like to get super set and have very opinionated about what they're doing, and then things will change and they're still sitting there doing the same thing without making the necessary pivots and stuff. And so a lot of the people that I think, like you said, maybe they had some traction and then it just didn't work for them. I think a lot of times it's not having that ability to pivot fast, because just like the way DJs do a career right now, it's just like, think about how many different transitions we've already been through. Like 2013, it was all about Beatport. You had to have the Beatport number one, right? You remember those days? And then it was Facebook. Facebook, you just had to just be pumping memes on your Facebook to grow your Facebook page and be releasing free downloads to grow your Facebook page. And then all of a sudden that goes out the window. Spotify comes in and it's all about the streaming. Lucky enough, my managers helped me into that pivot quick. And I learned, I was like, oh shit. I was like, no guys, Beatport. They're like, no, Spotify. And my original management team helped me make that pivot. And that was kind of when I first realized, I was like, oh shit, man, this thing is just changing before my eyes. And you really have to just have these strong opinions about things, but hold them loosely and just be able to have that ability to move on. And I think that ability to move on also kind of comes with time too. Cause I'm a lot more comfortable with making these pivots later on in my career than I was earlier on, because it's kind of an ego thing, right? Like when you have strong opinions about something, like let's say you're a super diehard one political party or something, and that's just the only way you're going to do life, right? That's an ego thing, because my opinion, like the ego likes to attach itself to certain things and it likes to have an identity, right? But after you kind of go through this humbling phase and you know, you get humbled a couple times and you lose the ego a little bit, you're a little bit more open-minded to changes over time. And so I think recognizing when you have to pivot and when things are changing and try to shift with that rather than battle, that's very important.
Yeah, the ego likes to be right.
Exactly.
And I want to be right. Yep. I want to do things my way. I am the smartest person. But if we can take a different approach and recognize like, hey, there's probably other people that know more than I can or that I can learn from. Can I be okay with not being right? Can I be okay with not knowing everything and be honest about the fact that I don't know everything, especially when everything is changing so often? You know, I've heard that a lot as well from business owners where it's like, it's about surrounding yourself with people that are smarter than you, people that know more than you, right? If you can surround yourself, even like these, you know, really, really successful CEOs and even, you know, Bezos and these big business owners, they recognize, they're like, I don't know everything. I just surround myself with really smart people that do, and I'm okay with not being right.
I learned a lot about this topic in particular from studying some of the greatest investors of all time. And when you study some of these greatest investors of all time, like these like billionaire hedge fund managers and these great investors, they'll have conviction about like say a stock position or something, right? And if the stock position starts working against them and goes the other way, the number one thing they do is they cut it. They cut their losses and they move on to the next thing. And hey, I'm wrong. Move on. There's this book called Market Wizards, and the Market Wizards guy interviews all these great investors. And if you read the book, throughout the entire book, that is the number one most common trait amongst all the greatest investors. They're totally okay saying they're wrong with an investment, cutting, you take your loss, you move on. So that was a big lesson I learned from that.
Yeah. And it makes me think about how many artists I know that had maybe two or three projects that they were working on, different brands that they were building, and then they decided it wasn't working and they started the next one and then they blew up from that. You know, how many guys do we know that are huge off of a project, but they had two or three before and they had to let those go in order to get to that?
I love seeing that more than anything. I love seeing these artists that been in the game, it doesn't work out the first time, reinvent the self, try it again. And a good example of somebody who made a pivot recently that I noticed too was someone like 8Craze, right? Has one of the biggest songs in the world. That didn't just come because he just woke up one day and decided to make house music. He was making trap and bass music because he's from Orlando. I've known Charlie before he was like really on tour like this and blew up. And he was making trap music. He was making bass music, dubstep, Jersey Club. He's tried all kinds of things and he put his time in, man. He grinded and grinded and grinded. He saw that that maybe wasn't working. And he goes, you know what? And then him and his team made an active pivot to try something new and say, hey, this isn't working. Let's try something new. Hey, you know, maybe some hip hop vocals with house music could be cool. And they got re-inspired on something, made some new music. They rebranded it properly and they did it, man. And right there, it just goes to show you just how you change at the right time.
Yeah. Yeah. My favorite example of that is LS Dream, who used to be Brills, Sammy. And the difference with that is he was actually doing well. Like Brills was killing it. He was doing great. He was making money touring. He had his whole Twonk brand and he just got uninspired. He's like, I'm just sick of playing the same fucking songs all the time. Creatively, I'm not inspired. And he took a huge risk. I remember talking to him about it and he was like, yeah, I just like completely let go of all of my income and I just like closed the brand. But I knew I was capable of doing it again in a different direction with something that I was even more inspired by. And I always really looked up to that because, you know, that takes a lot of courage. And a lot of guys will continue doing the same thing because it is making money and it is paying the bills. So that's a really scary thing to let go of. But, you know, if you've done it before, you can do it again. And if you have the skills and the mindset and the determination, like, you know, you are the asset at the end of the day. Right.
Yeah, that's a good example, man. Sammy's a good dude. I saw him make that pivot too. And I was just like, not only like he basically took the first brand. And like you said, if you do it once, he just took a lot of the things that worked and then you just applied it to a new thing. And it just goes to show you there's a certain set of characteristics that definitely can help you have a higher chance of success in this industry.
What else are some of those characteristics? What do you think it takes?
Back to what we were talking about when we first jumped on is the business side. You really just got to be good at the business shit. I know guys that are such good producers, but they're like a little too far to the artist side where it's just like, this is my art and I don't care about anything else and I don't care about the business stuff. And I know guys that are the best producers in the world and they have some of the best music I've ever heard in my life sitting on their hard drive. And it just sits there. And it's because they either don't feel like they don't have to do the business stuff or they just like don't care about it. And I feel like if you can take really good music and then you can take a really good understanding business and branding and stuff and you put it together, it's just like that's the holy grail right there.
Yeah, I think people are scared of it and intimidated by it. I think people just aren't willing to roll up their sleeves and recognize like, hey, if I want to be successful, I have to learn this shit. Like the biggest block I see so many people is with content, creating content like, oh, I just want to make music. I don't want to.
That's not the game.
Yeah. It's like, well, cool. Have fun just living in your bedroom then for the rest of your life. No one's ever going to hear it. And it is, you know, it's like free marketing, you know, like roll your sleeves up, learn it, have fun with it. It can be fun, but there's a lot of resistance to it, you know, because that's one of the things that the question I'm really seeking is, what is it about the 1% of people that actually go on to do this full time? And I would say it's probably 99% that don't actually make it. And when I say make it, I mean becoming a full time artist. You know, maybe maybe 5%, right? But the other 95%, like, what is it, right? What's going on? What does it take? That's what I'm really curious about digging into. And I do think that the resistance to the business side of it is a really big piece.
Yeah. Look at some of the major CEOs that run some of the biggest companies in the world. Like, if you ask these guys, like, that's Jeff Bezos, like, how do you guys run your sales department? Hey, how do you run your marketing department? I'm sure he could answer very easily all of those questions on how the entire business from the top down is ran. So imagine you're an artist, right? And you're doing this, trying to do this full time, and you have no idea how you get paid your royalties. You have no idea how publishing works. You just have to dive in and figure that shit out, man, because it's like reverse engineering it. And I remember one time when my manager, I had a first manager, and then we parted ways, and then my day-to-day manager became my manager at the time. And when we made that switch, we were like, okay, well, we have to go back and, like, you know, when you switch to a different manager, you kind of have to go back and figure out where all your stuff is, right? Like, well, where's my contracts from these songs, and where's this? And then when that change happened, I went back and I was like, I don't know shit about any of this stuff. Where's my contracts? Yeah. What contracts? Oh, what did you sign for this? I was like, I have no idea. And then that was my aha moment, where I was like, I got to get a dial on this shit, because this is my business, mm-hmm. and I don't know how any of this stuff works. And then I dove in, and now I can read all my contracts myself. And basically, I could operate every part of my business myself if I had to.
Yeah, man. So important. What did you do to, just when you say dive in, like, how did you really learn all this stuff? What did you do? And what would you recommend, you know, other people do to start wrapping their head around the business?
First thing I did was I asked my manager a lot of questions. When I signed with the new manager, I was like, what does this mean? What does this mean? And then what I started doing was I started reading the record contracts over myself. So I'd get a single deal from a label, and I'd be like, I'm not just going to send this to my lawyer. I'm like, let me read this over and actually see what's in this.
Yeah.
And it was that. And then as I kind of realized that this was very important, as over time, I just slowly learned everything over time.
Yeah, that's great, man. That's really, it's really great advice. Something I see a lot of young artists do is they would get a contract and they'd just be so excited about getting the contract that they just sign it. And it's like, well, hey, do you even understand any of this? And if not, what you just said is huge. It's okay to ask questions. Email them back. Hey, what does this mean? I don't understand this. Can you elaborate on this? Right? Like, that's, asking questions, I think, is one of the most important things. It reminds me of Jake Udell, I think, is one of the most badass music managers. He was behind Cruella, behind Zoo. Now he's doing, like, crazy shit and, I don't know, like, blockchain or something, but just a genius guy. I remember meeting him really early on when he was managing Cruella. They hadn't blown up yet. And I remember him calling JSO, who I used to work with, and just asking, like, hey, how does this blog thing work? What are good blogs that I should reach out to? And I just saw him asking questions, and the how quickly he rose, like, just that skill and that courage to ask questions all the time, to learn from as many people as you can. Like, he went from like a noob to a freaking powerhouse manager in a year, because he was just really curious and he wasn't afraid to ask questions. So I think that's really great advice.
Interesting. When Dallas first moved out here, he was basically the only person I knew in LA. So when I moved out to LA, I spent a lot of time with Dallas, and Dallas actually moved in with Rain Man from Cruella. And so here I am trying to do this as a career and go hang out with Dallas. And the first people I meet when I'm in LA is Cruella. And I was like, whoa, Cruella, just at that time, they just had put out Alive and it was huge hit. And they were so nice, so welcoming and cool for, like, having such, like, a big song and having so much buzz around them at the time, and they were, like, super welcoming. And I always remember that, how nice they were. Yeah. So just me, I was nobody at the time, you know? But I remember that whole era and how Jake kind of propelled them too.
Yeah, totally, man. Yeah, they're good people. Has there ever been a point where you thought about quitting and it just got really tough?
Yeah, I mean, during the pandemic.
Oh yeah. What did you do to get through that?
It was a crazy, crazy whirlwind. Life crisis is going on for everybody, particularly me. But at that time, I was like, "What the fuck am I going to do?" And I remember I got it. I got another side job in crypto. I really got heavy into crypto at the time. I'd been involved with crypto before since 2017. So when 2020 happened, I mean, I saw it was like a crazy market. And I was like, oh, I kind of want to dive in a little more. And I ended up doing some digital marketing for one of my friends and his brother's companies in crypto. And I made a pivot there. I did that. But at that time, I was like, you know, we didn't know how long this thing was going to go on for. Like, when am I going to play shows again? Anything. And I was like, maybe I'm done, right? Maybe I'm just going to go back to working in finance or something. I don't know what I was going to do. And so I thought about quitting multiple times. And I just kind of was like, you know what? I looked at it and I was like, you know, I put 10 years into this thing already. I was like, I'm not ready to quit. And so I did. I had another little side gig I was doing. I was still making music. I was still making content every day. I was doing live mixes and live streams and that whole thing too. And I was just doing it all. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to keep doing this. And then I changed my perspective on it. I was like, a lot of DJs stopped putting out music in the pandemic. And I was like, you know what? What if I flip that on its head and I just keep my release schedule super active? And I kept my release schedule super active the all 2020. Go back on 2020. Yeah. I put out, you know, 12, 13 songs that year, probably still remixes, everything. One of the songs I put out was with a guy named Noctu. He's awesome, new up and comer, killing it right now. And we linked up in the pandemic and we put out a song called What's the Move. And What's the Move came out in the middle of the pandemic. It was well received in the pandemic. And then as we came out of the pandemic, the song just took off in DJ's live sets. And that kind of propelled that next phase of my career post pandemic. So that was really cool.
Nice, man. I mean, I imagine for a lot of people, I mean, for everybody during that time, myself included, it was a lot of stress, a lot of the unknown, a lot of, you know, just fear and anxiety and emotions, right? What did you do and what do you do to handle those moments of stress where life gets really heavy and hard?
I stay super active, man. I'm very, very active lifestyle, very, very kind of regimented health routine and diet. That's something that I was lucky enough to be part of a family that was a priority. And my dad was a bodybuilder. He did like the Mr. Olympia like contest back in the day. And so I grew up and I watched him every day. Dad's going to the gym and there's nothing stopping dad from going to the gym. And he just had this military discipline about exercise. So I saw that. And then my uncle was he was an original training partner of Bruce Lee. So he was heavily involved in martial arts and he had like a lifetime martial arts career. And so part of his martial arts training was he did a lot of physical training too and fitness training. And him and Bruce Lee, actually at one point they were swapping fitness tips because they helped each other with fitness at a certain time too, alongside martial arts. So having those two building blocks, I take those into my daily life now. It's like I surf, I exercise, and I do martial arts. I'm really big into Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Brazilian jiu-jitsu, for example, it's just like super, super difficult thing, right? And you just have these like these things you do that are very, very difficult that you just do. And if you get comfortable with doing really, really difficult things, the rest of the stuff kind of becomes a lot easier and you just don't put so much stress on it. So that attitude kind of helps me through everything. And I'm sure you know that. I saw you do CrossFit, man. Same concept.
It's the same philosophy that we really preach as well, is like if you intentionally put yourself through challenging things so that the rest of life isn't as challenging. It's as simple as that. I remember discovering that when I was even before I did CrossFit, I was just doing more bodybuilding, but I wouldn't like super early in the morning, like 5:30 in the morning. And I was just like, you know, squatting out, you know, doing heavy squats. And I remember the moment specifically, and I was like underneath all of this weight and in my head, something clicked. I'm like, nothing that I do for the rest of the day is going to be as hard as this. But yeah, it's like that, you know, like seek discomfort, that whole idea of just like actually seek it out, be intentional about creating that challenge for yourself, because ultimately what it does is it makes you stronger and then you can handle those other challenges.
Yeah. And this is something too that, you know, as a producer and artist, like more of the creative side, it's such a polar opposite of doing hard things sometimes, because it's very comfortable. You sit in your chair, you're making music, the lifestyle it's kind of going out, it's partying, it's clubbing and stuff too. And it's just like, they're two polar opposites. I just really found that if I have this and I have this, it just is the you know, just kind of balances each other out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I go really deep into talking about that type of stuff and a lot of the coaching that I do about the duality of the masculine and the feminine, right? The creative side is very much the feminine. It's like, I'm here to sort of be in flow and surrender to the creativity and be in that sort of kind of feminine space. And then the other side of it is the masculine, which is like, all right, we've got goals, we've got shit to do, we've got to show up, we've got to be disciplined, we've got to get to the chair, we've got to build the business. And you want to be able to play in both of those fields. It's not one or the other. Too much of the grind in the masculine and you end up burning out and things become really hard, but also too much like sitting around in the flowy feminine space and you don't get anywhere. So, you know, on a deeper spiritual level, like that's why we exist, is because masculine and feminine energy have came together through the form of our parents and created us. And that's literally sparked life. Not to go too far down the spiritual rabbit hole, but I love nerding out on that shit.
That's cool, man. I love also too, like, as you probably find with CrossFit and as I probably find with surfing or jiu-jitsu, it's also like having these alternative communities outside of music, right? Because like once music becomes, like, I have awesome friends in music, don't get me wrong and stuff, but at the end of the day, it's kind of like they're, sometimes it can be like a coworker vibe going on because you work with these people and you collaborate, you do business with all these people. So I find that like having these communities outside of music and work is really important too. And I'm like CrossFit, for example, like that's an all, like you guys like help each other and you guys go through hell with each other and you guys help each other out a lot. And you just have this like tribal feel to it for producers and artists to like really keep their like mental health in the top of mind. I think that's very important, is to just find another community outside of music. You know, they've done a lot of research that shows, you know, the detriments of like being lonely and stuff and how hard it is. Some of the happiest communities in the entire world, in the happiest countries, it's like one of the big common denominators is the quality of the relationships they have with other people and living in these like tight-knit communities. And it's just a part of like who we are as humans. And as a DJ, a producer, it's you're a one-man business. And so there's a lot of times where you're flying on a plane by yourself. It's just you in the studio making music. And so just having this other community aspect to your life that has nothing to do with your work is really integral.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. To be honest, I hadn't really thought about that before, but I think having some variety in your life is so important as well. If all you do is hang out with producers, all you do is listen to the same kind of music, all you do is go to the clubs, it's like, you're going to burn out really freaking quick, right? You need to have some inspiration. And you know, I like the metaphor that like life is like having like a 88 key piano, right? You've got this whole range, but a lot of us are only playing the little 12 keys that are right in front of us. And it's like, let's expand that. Let's play some of those high notes. Let's play some of those low notes. Let's see what else life has to offer. And especially as a creative person, I think monotony is the opposite of creativity, doing the same thing over and over. Yeah. So if you want to have more creativity, you want to have more inspiration, you need to go experience more life and experience more people and try new things. And then you can bring that back into the studio and paint with some different colors that you've never painted with before.
Absolutely. That's a good point.
You're a father as well, right? You have a son.
Year old. Name's Oliver. He's upstairs right now.
How is that balancing? You know, you have a big responsibility there that, you know, a lot of other people and producers don't, you know, to be a father, to have another person that's dependent on you. How do you balance fatherhood with your career and everything that you have going on as a DJ?
When you have like a kid, you realize that what you were giving, you realize you have so much more to give. So what I thought was like my threshold for everything I was doing, I realized it was like double that, right? So after that happened, so there's so many things it teaches you, like being patient. Like I'm just such a very patient person now with a lot of things. And I'm never like, I don't know, I'm just overall a very patient person. And there's so many good lessons involved with that, right? And so I think after it happened early in my career, so that was happening as my career was happening. So they were kind of growing in lockstep with each other, which is really interesting.
Yeah. I've heard from a lot of people, a lot of men specifically, that when they have a kid, it's like there's something that unlocks in them because there's sort of a deeper driving force and just a bigger reason to show up beyond just themselves.
I think subconsciously too, was it happened right when I started, literally the first year I went on tour. In 2014 was like my first big touring year. It happened that year. And I didn't think about it like that at the time, but looking back on it, it was like, you're just going to make this work no matter what. There's just, there wasn't really a plan B. So.
And that's the mindset and the attitude that I really try to help people develop mm-hmm. it, because I think it has to be, which is just this, like, no matter what, I'm going to burn my boats. I'm going to figure out a way there. And to have that, you know, you're chasing a dream. A lot of people are chasing a dream. That's like, it's such a, you know, it's such a competitive thing. It's like this 1 in 1,000 chance of making it. So it's like, you can't approach it with half-ass energy. You've got to approach it with this, no matter what, I'm going to make it happen. And so, you know, for everyone that out there that doesn't have kids, can you still learn how to, you know, reach in and figure out wherever that switch is and flip it? And for me, the big one, because, you know, I don't have kids yet either, but I am, you know, I think looking forward to that day someday. But the thing that helps me think about that is just the fact that, like, we're not here for that long. You know, little journey in life is just a little blink of an eye. So what the fuck are we doing while we're here? Like, let's get after it, you know, and to think, to literally like think about your mortality every day. Like, yo, this little journey is going to end very soon. So what are we doing? Like, let's figure out what that real potential actually is and let's go for it.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Looking back on your career and your journey, what would you have done differently if you could talk to little younger Henry?
There's a couple things, like more business-wise things I would do differently. But one of the other things was, I feel like I made some pivots with my sound that were, I dabbled into new styles of music, maybe. And I definitely timed some pivots wrong with my music. I tried new sounds out. I did different things. And sometimes it doesn't work. I think it was probably like 2017, 18. I changed my sound a lot. I was pivoting and it turned out like some of the pivots that I made and some of the music I was making, it just wasn't at the right time. And I remember like my agent at the time called me and they were just like, you know, nobody's booking the sound right now. And I was like, shit, man. And I had to go back and make some pivots. So if I like had some advice to people like going back, there's going to be times where you're going to have to like pivot your career and stuff, but really just try to put out music that you're just really proud of. At the time, I was just putting it out. It's just like, oh, it's going here. Let me just keep up with the hockey puck. And some of the stuff that I put out, it wasn't really like my favorite music that I was making. Like now after like, you know, 2019, 2020, the songs that I have to put out, it needs to be this feeling like, when I'm looking at it on the USB, when I'm testing out new music, if I scroll over that song and I don't want to play that song, that's not it. I want to go to my new song and be like, yes, I'm playing this shit out tonight. And that's the feeling I want to stand behind on some of the songs. And so a lot of the stuff that I put out on the pivot, I was just chucking it out there. Cause, oh, I got to pivot my sound because blah, blah, blah. I want to try new things. And looking back on it, I just wish I would have had a little more of that feeling in some of the music that I was putting out. That was number one. The other thing was, when you start having that first wave up in your career, which, you know, I was lucky enough to have, I would have done some things different financially for sure. Cause you get there and you start making money. You're on tour and doing all these things and you're like, oh, the money's just going to come in every month, man. It's good.
Yeah.
And then you get a couple years in and the industry changes a little bit. New artists come up. And maybe the money goes down, or maybe you're not getting booked as much for certain times and stuff. And you really gotta be, this career is so up and down. You just really have to be on point financially. Your financial habits have to be good. So I would encourage anyone that wants to be an artist, get that shit figured out before you start doing this, because it's the classic story, right? Hot up and coming kid gets signed to a big label, gets $1 million advance, blows the $1 million advance on cars. It's just a tale as old as time. And artists, particularly as creatives and stuff, you don't always have the good money managing habits and stuff. So I would encourage everyone to go out and really, really think about that as like part of your business. Like, hey, I'm managing money as well too, right? I'm controlling my business, where money's going and stuff. You need to know where all your money's going in and out. And you should know everything about that.
It's smart. you know, I think that a lot of us didn't grow up with real proper financial education. They don't teach that in public schools. And if your parents weren't really good with money, then, you know, it's really on you to learn that. You know, I've been talking a lot about the sports world and even interviewing, you know, other coaches and people that come from the sports world, because I think there's a lot to learn from the way that teams and organizations approach things and what we can actually learn and apply as artists. I think one of the coolest things that you see with, you know, like NFL teams and NBA teams is they have financial advisors that come in and are like, oh, hey, you're a 21-year-old kid that just got a $10 million contract. You're probably going to fucking blow it. So let's teach you some things because we know you didn't learn this shit, right? So they're trying to help their people. And it's so cool that they do that. Obviously, not everybody listens, but it's such important information. It would be cool to see that happen a bit. You know, even like booking agencies should offer that, right? Like, hey, we're going to be giving you a lot of money, so let's have some financial education that comes with that and make sure that, you know, you don't blow it, right? You have that a little bit of that lull and you need to, you know, you need to have some money in the bank to get through those.
Yeah. And then real estate is a good thing to learn about. Like that's honestly what saved me in the pandemic. I bought a house in 2016 and I was able to sell that actually. And
cool.
It saved me, you know? And I was thinking about it. I was like, if I didn't have this, I don't know what I'd be doing right now. And back to what you were saying too with the NBA players, like if you think about Shaq is, if you watch some of the bits on him, and he made a lot of investments back when he first started making money into like other businesses and stuff. And he had like ownership in all these business interests. And as an artist, your main source of income is your touring, right? I would say most artists, it's about 80% of your total revenue, let's say. That can vary, obviously. But I think understanding the concept for artists when they first start making a little bit of money, you should be trying to acquire business interests, right? Because the touring money, it's like a faucet. Somebody can just turn it off one day, whether it's a pandemic, whether it's something else, maybe the sound changes or media changes. It's a faucet. Someone could turn it off and you don't, that's done, right? And so along the way, as you start like trying to manage your finances as an artist, try to look for opportunities to invest and get business interests in other things as well too. Like start new things. You know, a lot of artists, they sell merch too. That's just one thing. A lot of artists can sell digital products, sample packs, courses, or maybe they're just investing in other things. You know, there's technologies and a lot of artists get invited to invest, like seed rounds and new music tech startups as well too. And I think those are all valid things to explore.
Yeah, I remember talking to one of my friends and he had just popped off doing really well, you know, making fucking 20, 30 grand a night, like making real money. And I remember asking him, like, dude, like, what are you doing with all this money now? And I thinking he was going to tell me like, oh, I'm buying all this cool shit. And, you know, and he's like, dude, he's like, I'm buying Subway franchises.
There you go.
I'm investing in Subways, investing in car washes, like random shit. But now he's like chilling.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah, he's doing fine. Like he's doing real good.
See, when you start doing this, like there's nobody that teaches you how to do that stuff, right?
Yeah.
It's really hard, especially when you're in the moment and things are just all happening at once and it's just like this whirlwind and all of a sudden. So yeah, that's awesome, man. I love hearing stories like that.
Well, look, there's your post DJ career retirement job is financial consulting for up and coming DJs. There's your next business whenever you're ready. Help these guys out.
I was actually, I did work for a financial advisor before I was doing music. So I got a little bit of background.
There you go, man.
I was out of college and I wanted to be like a portfolio manager, and I worked for one of these like finance companies, and then I was just like stuck in the mail room, kind of just like doing, like marketing and stuff. And I was like, dude, this is not what I want to do.
Yep. That was, dude, same story for me. I graduated college on, I had an economics degree, graduated college on Saturday. Moved in with a girlfriend on Sunday, started a financial advising job on Monday. And I was about 2 months into my training program. And I had a call with like just like a catch up call with an ex-girlfriend, and she told me, she was like, yeah, you know, I went to my first day of LSAT classes, you know, to go take the LSAT to go to law school. She said, I sat down in class, halfway through the class, I realized this is not what I want to do with my life. And she just got up, walked out of the class and just quit. And I, when we had this call, I was on my way to meet with a client, and I was, you know, selling life insurance and retirement shit. And it hit me. It hit me like a freaking lightning bolt. And I was like, I don't want to do this either. And I literally just, I went to the meeting. I like met my client. I said, hey, guess what? I'm actually going to go quit. I drove straight to the office and I quit on the spot. And I came home and I told my girlfriend, I was like, hey, like, this ain't it. This ain't it for me. And then I moved to LA. I was like, I love music. I have a business degree. I'm going to put these two things together and go work in the music business, and just fucking went to LA with $1,000. And I knew one person, and the rest is history, dude.
I love hearing stuff like that. Cause also too, another important thing too, if anyone's listening to this in or two, it's like you only have a small period of time to really take high risk in your life, right? You get out of college, the stakes are pretty low in your early 20s, right? And that's the time in your life you really just got to shoot for the moon and take a lot of risk. Because as you get older, you know, you start having a family, and then it's just you start getting more responsibilities, and things happen and things change. It's like when you're in that early 20s and you're fresh out of college, you should be taking as many risks as possible.
Yeah, 1,000%. Just fucking go for it. And I would even push that. I'd say, like, if you have a family, you have responsibilities, you know, later in life, 100%, you need to take care of those. But
yeah.
But also, if you don't, I don't care if you're 40, I don't care if you're 50,
you like, still can
go for your dream. Like, you can always reinvent yourself. You can always, like, you know, what was it? Like Colonel Sanders didn't start Kentucky Fried Chicken until he was like 65 or something.
Oh, really?
Like that. Like there's, yeah, like, yeah. It was a real, real person, real story. He was like 65 or 70 when he started it. You know, it's like anything is possible. But yeah, our whole system is kind of messed up. That's like, you know, go to college, get a degree, like follow this template. And it's like, yeah, there's other ways of doing it. So you'll never know though, until you, I think first and foremost, just figure out what lights you up, you know, back to what was exciting. It was exciting for you to produce music and throw parties and chase that feeling. And you've been continuing to follow that feeling. And also though, like use your head and be smart and be strategic about it. But look where it's gotten you, man. You've done some pretty cool shit.
Thanks, man. I actually went back to my high school and I won like 2018 or something. I won like alumni award or something. I was like, really, me out of all these like fancy doctors and stuff. And I went up and I was like, I winged the speech, right? I didn't write anything for this speech, like classic creative artist, like not preparing for shit. Anyways, I went up there and I was, my speech basically like, hey, you know what? If you don't fit in anywhere and you don't want to do what everybody else is doing, that's totally fine because there's other options out there. And what I really kind of focused on was like, you know, you go to school, you go to college. And I was like, kind of just look at that stuff like your network. Even if you went to college and you didn't know what you want to do, just like wake up every day in college and just be like, I'm just going to meet as many people as I can. And I'm just going to grow my network here. And that's kind of what I told the kids. And you just are going to take that network. And I try to like round it off by saying, you know, this school that you guys are graduating from is a very valuable community. So I know some of these people here sitting around next to you, you might not get along with these people. You guys have, you know, little beef going on about whatever. Just like throw that out the window and just treat these people like your community, and you guys can potentially be doing business together later on or start something cool.
Yeah, man, you hit on a huge point. As they say, your network is your net worth.
Exactly.
And like I mentioned, man, when I moved to LA, I only knew one person. Yep. My best friend lived there and that was it. And by the end of that first year, I had my own office at Capitol Records overlooking Hollywood. And it was 100%, not because I'm smart, not because I know shit about the music business. It was 100% networking. I can shake hands and make friends and meet people. And I mean, I built a whole career really with like what I did at Icon. I was just a dot connector. I was just like, just introducing people. And that skill set is probably, in my opinion, especially if you want to get in on the business side more, it's like the best skill set you can possibly have, you know?
100%. I remember when I first moved here too in LA, I was like, we would just go to Control Fridays. And that was like, that was the networking hub, man. I would go, I landed in California and I remember a week after I landed, I was at Control Friday. Every single week, I would drive all the way from Orange County. I would drive up there and, for 2 years straight, every single Friday night, man. And
yeah,
that's kind of like, you definitely have to put in your time networking too. Like I knew, like I know myself, and I know I'm not like the best music producer of all time, right? I'm not like, I feel like I have passable skills as a musician, but I think I really leveled up the other aspects that I knew I could do well, like network, like talk to people and things like that, and other business sides and stuff too. So that's another important thing, is like really figure out like what you do well and just lead with it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's huge, man. I mean, I can't even think about how many careers were launched in Control, just being in that room,
you for know, sure.
shaking hands. Literally just today, I had a session with a client, and we were reviewing his goals and the progress he'd made so far this year. And one of the things that he hadn't done was kind of making connections with like a certain club and that he wants to play at and some promoters. And he's like, yeah, you know, I hit him up on Instagram all the time. And I was like, okay, cool. Well, how many times have you been down there? How many times have you gone to the club and been a part of the community and met everybody and shook hands? He's like, oh, I only have actually been in a couple times. And there's something to be said for that face-to-face interaction. And, you know, not everybody is, you know, super extroverted, but I look at it as being a part of the community, right? It's like Control had a community, like it is a club. So it's like, be a part of the club, join the club, be a part of it, show up, be a part of the community. And they're ultimately like, if the people that are in there are like-minded, they like the same music, they're doing the same thing, like you're probably going to get along with them. So you just got to get over that, whatever sort of shyness might hold you back, and put yourself in what might be maybe an uncomfortable situation at first. But at the end of the day, it's like, if you all share that same mutual interest for music, then you're probably going to get along.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an important part too. It's just like being part of the culture as well too, right? Like imagine you're a DJ and you're an artist and you're like part of, you're like, you're doing dance music culture, but you're not like a part of it. So it's like going out every night and just like understanding the culture and being a part of that too is super, super helpful, man. And at the end of the day, like for me, that's where the passion comes from. I just love dance music, man. I've just been listening to dance music for decades. I just love the music, right? And I love the scene and I love everything about it. So being part of that and just getting involved with that is a first step too for a lot of people that know how to get started.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great, man. Well, I think that the scene is very lucky to have you be a part of it. I think that, you know, it really is cool just to see what you've created for yourself and how passionate you are about what you do. And you know, that's what it's all about, man. So, I really appreciate you taking the time to share, you know, a bit of your story and your wisdom. And, I'm really excited to continue to see where things go from here and for us to, you know, the seed has been officially been planted for this new friendship now. So I appreciate you.
You're going to show me how to clean and squat properly next.
Hey, yeah. When I get back out to LA, you teach me how to surf. I'll teach you how to do squat cleans.
Deal, man. Deal.
Hell yeah. I'll see you out there.
All right. Come on, brother.